hour two, we're going to go madly off in a different direction. Very fortunate to have Rick Cole's back in studio. We're going to be talking about, well, how many of you have to figure out or have to find yourself in a position where you have to present what you do, you have to talk to colleagues, you have to make a case, you have to get up in front of people, and you're a little nervous about it, and maybe it's just the business presentations. How many of you out there are doing that? Don't take your hands off the steering wheel, please. Well, Rick Cole's joining me in studio. We're going to be talking just about that. Rick, great to have you here.
Thanks, James. Great to be here as well about the topic.
And it's, you know, this is in this day and age, mm-hmm. we've had downsizing, we've had people moving on jobs, we've had more people taking on responsibilities. Mm-hmm. The need to be able to tell the story of yourself, of your company, of your organization, of your not-for-profit, the need to be able to generate a buzz, yeah. sustain it, and really come off as somebody who's got something to say and get above the clutter is super important, yet so many people I meet are hopeless yeah. at public speaking and presentations.
I don't know why it's an overlooked career enhancer, because that's what it is. It's a differentiator. If you're a good presenter and you take opportunities to present in your organization, it really can highlight some of your talents. I'll never forget a long time ago when I started out in organizations, I asked a guy, what are the three things you need to be successful in this business? And my background is airlines, as you know. And
yeah.
He said three things. I was in London at the time. He said, and I'll cut the story short, he said time management, product knowledge, and communication skills. And I have to say, those three tips all those years ago have been really, really valid, especially the presentations.
And they all sort of come together, don't they, when you start looking at them?
Well, yeah, you need time management to make a presentation. You tell the audience that you're going to speak for 20 minutes, and that's the time span that they will assume. You need to have knowledge. The preparation is so important in a presentation. There's a great saying, James, failing to plan is planning to fail.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you don't plan your presentation, it will show up in some shape or form during your 20 minutes. And of course, you got to be prepared for that question time, right?
Yeah.
And that's, again, your knowledge of the topic.
Now, when I think of public speaking and presentations, you know, there are so many, you know, you go online right now and you take a look around Dubai or around the Emirates, there are, you know, handfuls of different, you know, Susan McCauley, AmazingWomanRock.com, right. She does a little bit of this. You do a whole bunch of different training as well. There are a handful, you know, Richard Dean does training on this stuff.
All right.
And, you know, the question I constantly come back to mm-hmm. is, yes, we do elocution training in some schools, and yes, we do public speaking in some schools.
Right.
How is the where is the ball getting dropped in the education process in that once our students leave, they still don't seem to have enough of these skills?
Yeah, it's a good question. I grew up in Toronto and Chicago, actually, as well. And we had a class, Current Affairs, and we were expected to present, I think it was every 3 or 4 weeks, each student, stand up and talk about a current affair for 3 minutes to the class and take questions. And that was age 8, 9, 10.
Okay.
Yeah, so I think it comes from education. Number two, it also comes from the culture in which you were brought up. Mm. And some cultures create more opportunities, encourage this more.
Yeah.
Number three, I think that it depends on the kind of job you accept. Now, I was in sales for 35 years.
So there you go. You've yep. got to. If you can't present something and get people convinced, you're out of a job.
Well, I think I did pretty well. I had a lot of rejection and objections. I had to make 10,000 sales calls, and as I say on my website, that in itself is no big deal because there's a lot of people out there who made 20,000 calls.
Yeah.
But I learned something from each one. The good ones and the bad ones. And I think I've been able to carry that forward now in this career as a trainer and help other people.
One of the things we were talking about, because you're actually in town, you've been doing some training over the last week.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you deal, we're going to go through the whole process mm-hmm. of doing presentations and making it work and making, you know, the optimum presentation, because this, you know, think about it as your Nightline tutorial this evening. It's University of the Air this evening on Nightline. But the first thing I want to sort of dig into a little bit is nerves.
Yeah.
And, you know, you've done what, thousands of presentations now, if you go back to when you started with the airlines till today.
Yeah.
Easily thousands.
Oh, yeah.
How do you deal with the nerves?
Well, they asked me today, or they asked me in Abu Dhabi when I did this course the last 2 days. They said, do you get nervous? And I said, well, absolutely. Every presentation. They said, why do you do it? I said, what's my living? I have to do it. If I don't do it, I don't earn. But there is a wonderful feeling of making a successful presentation, perhaps. Maybe that's one of the reasons. But there are also, James, things that you can do to reduce the nerves. Now, public speaking, in the Book of Lists in 1977, and I think it stands today, it was cited as the number one fear of the human being.
Yeah.
Even more than jumping off a building, of insects, of visiting your mother-in-law.
Well, I don't know.
Dogs. I don't know about that, right. But giving a presentation or public speaking cited number one fear. And I guess that kind of attracts me in a way.
Why do you think that is? I mean, what is it? I always liken it to maybe it's simply the fear of sounding stupid.
I think that's one. Number two, the fear of not being successful. Mm. We all want to be accepted. We want to do well. I think it's the fear of actually drying up and forgetting your words.
Yeah.
And there's tricks around that. And I think it's the fear of simply not being accepted. Now, one thing to remember about the audience, which is absolutely, there's two things about the audience that we have to remember. One is,
so this is the audience. If you're getting up to do a presentation, and we're going to get into all the steps and
I'm jumping.
But it's okay. Go because we're talking nerves, and part of it is the audience, and there's a couple things that you got to keep in mind about them.
Yeah, they're not there necessarily to see you fail. If I have 100 people in front of me, there might be one or two, and they don't like me anyway. So, okay, I accept that. But the majority, by far, want you to be successful. They also have that wonderful word of empathy for you.
Yeah.
They do feel for you.
Well, they don't want to be up there themselves.
Well, that's right. And I think there's a small feeling of admiration that you're actually doing it.
Hmm.
Now, the other thing is they say never overestimate your audience's knowledge of the subject, but don't underestimate their intelligence.
Right.
So when you're preparing your material and getting to know your material, get to know it as an expert. They say spend 80% of 80% of your effort to do a good presentation is prior to the presentation.
Hmm.
And the rest should be, well, I don't want to use the word easy, but you should have a method. You should be fairly routine if you've done a lot of hard work in advance. And that is also showing respect for your audience. For instance, let me give you one small example of how you can reduce nerves. When I was in Abu Dhabi, I read two newspapers of my breakfast, or at least the night before, it doesn't matter. And so I try to take an article from that local newspaper, wherever I am in the world, and bring it up in the class in the first hour or so, or even the first half hour. It shows that you actually are interested in where you are, you know something about it, and you're aware. And it can be a great icebreaker, which is another great way to reduce your nerves. If you can icebreak with your audience in the first 10 minutes, it'll help an awful lot in getting through the hour, 2 hours, indeed the whole day.
So it's getting the audience on your side.
Well, it's getting the audience on your side. It's asking a question. It's giving a talk that is directly relevant to their needs.
Mm. So demonstrating that you're not just getting off a plane or getting out of your car and you've been paid a fee to come and do this, and when you're going to pack up and leave and you're going to go back to wherever you are, and it's
That's right, James. There's a friend of mine, I can't name him. He says I train in plane. He said, I don't hang around. Well, I do hang around, and I don't leave the venue until they've all come up and asked me questions if they want to, or they contact me on the website.
Yeah.
But you've got to make it relevant to the needs. And I arrived early to research the company. In fact, I did it by email. So I was doing presentation techniques, but some of the examples I used in the classroom were very relevant to this oil company that I was doing the course for.
Rick, we're going to take a really short pause. When we come back, Rick Coles is going to we're going to back right down to the very beginning, and we're going to give you here in studio a master class on how to think about doing better presentations that can really change what you're doing and possibly have an impact on your company and ultimately make you more confident in what you're doing today in your business. This is Nightline Dubai Eye, 103.8 FM. 4001 Nightline DXB. If you want to get involved in the program, I'm joined in studio by Rick Coles, and we're talking about how to do those presentations. It's a masterclass. You can pull over, and it truly is, Rick. This is
well, it's a mini masterclass.
But I, you know, I'm more and more today. I know we go and we take courses, and you know, at the university, I teach things in 20-week or 10-week cycles at an hour and a bit, you know, a shot. So you know, you can start adding up the hours that are involved there, but. There is so much that we could at least start on in, you know, a 45-minute burst where people have at least an opportunity to get a taste, to get started on it. And if they want to go do more, they do. But and I think we need to do more of that. So I'm really keen to create some of that atmosphere and some of that environment here on the program.
Yeah, it's a good point you make, because that's exactly the point I made with my group yesterday when I said goodbye to them. I said, look, what we've done here is I've laid out a framework for you. We've practiced everything because I believe in the do and understand of everything.
Right.
And obviously in the course, they have to give two presentations. And I have to say this, that one of the thrills of doing this course is that you see the improvement in the guys in the second presentation.
Yeah.
And man, they really get a buzz out of it. And they say, I've improved. I've narrowed the performance gap.
Which is excellent.
Yeah, well, it's excellent. They did it. And the other side benefit for all of us is I learned so much about other subjects.
Yeah.
The subjects are... Like, one guy yesterday talked about robots. Somebody talked about the number one his famous film. Somebody else talked about the environment. That was interesting because Abu Dhabi's sort of into that at the moment, and as Dubai is, and so forth. So I sort of learn a lot about other things.
Oh,
but I try to get them away from the work... related
presentation. That's got to be hard, because work is something they know everything about, so it's easy to talk about that.
It's easy to talk about it, but if you allow it, what happens is you get a presentation that's already done, that's been redone for the course, and that's not the idea.
Yeah.
So, I ask them to do something fresh.
If we were sitting down right now, we're going to start this whole process, the micro course on Nightline to help, you know, people get better at their public speaking skills. Where do we start?
Now you're making me nervous.
Yeah.
No.
How would you open up that door?
Well, first of all, it's a subject. I mean, what subject am I going to talk about, and what relevance does it have to the group? Now, when I was in sales, airline sales, that's easy, of course. We had various products and services, so it was easily chosen. Today, I'm invited I'm invited to speak at various events. And so they kind of give a wide field and say, what would you like to talk about?
Mm.
And then I ask a few open questions to get information. Well, you know, what type of group, what kind of audience, what are their needs, and so forth. And then I get a subject. And then what I do is explore the subject. Now, one of my favorite things is mind mapping. And that's really the first stage. I mind map the idea on one or two flip charts. And then I put it up in my office at home, and I look at it for a while. So I let that kind of settle in. Now, one of the keys, of course, is last-minute presentation preparation, or procrastinating on your presentation. Not a good idea.
Okay.
We've all done it. Sometimes we've been asked at the last moment, have somebody dropped out, can you come and speak? And I said, when is it? And so it's tomorrow. Okay, right. But the best thing is you have 2 or 3 weeks and you can start this process.
Yeah.
Okay, so you get the mind map done. Then you have to
When we say a mind map, that's putting the key terms out, the broad themes of things.
Right.
That you just start looking at to really start seeing the linkages of how you put these things together.
Exactly, the linkages, and you start to see the various subjects that you could talk about, the different directions you could go.
So this is really broad. You're throwing everything up on the wall.
Oh, yeah.
And
it's a brainstorm. It's a Tony Bazan mind map plus the brainstorm method. And I do it in the classroom with the guys and the ladies, and I say, give me a subject, any subject. And my goodness, the one they gave me yesterday was carrots, the vegetable.
Okay.
So I mind mapped the carrots as if I was going to give a presentation, and I came up with something. Now, the next very important thing you need to do is set your objectives. What are the goals? What do you hope them to know by the time they leave?
Why are you actually doing this presentation?
That's right. And you'd be amazed.
How many people don't do that?
Oh, everybody didn't do it on their first presentation. And if they're listening, I think they did great on the second presentation because they did do it. And as such, I think they learned that setting clear, smart objectives, specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, and time-based, is absolutely crucial.
Hmm.
You cannot start your presentation until you know what you want to do. Then there's more research, because you've set your objectives, and then the research, I believe, has to be done. Some of the things you'll know, some you have to research, others you'll have to go to people.
That's why time becomes important.
Time does become important, and that's why I said that 80 or 90, 85% of all the efforts are in advance of actually delivering, because all the hard work is back there. Then you have to decide other questions. For instance, how am I going to do my introduction? What is the icebreaker I'm going to use?
How much importance do you put on that icebreaker and introduction?
I put it on a lot of importance, and I came up with INTRO for intro.
Okay.
And I stands for you need to create interest in your subject. And you can do that by referring to something topical today. You can create it by a quote or a statistic or something of that sort, but create interest. N is to establish their needs for listening. In other words, you have to say to them, this is what's in it for you. I mean, everybody in that audience is asking that question, and they're looking at you and say, well, what's in it for me? Why should I listen to you? Whether it's 15 minutes, 20 minutes, and in the rare cases, keeping people's attention for 30 minutes. But I can talk about that later. T is for timing. I'm going to speak for 20 minutes. R is for your policy on response, in other words, questions. And O is for objective. So it's all in the INTRO. Now, when you do those five things in the beginning of your talk, it will take no longer than 90 seconds. I can give you...
That's really quick.
It's pretty quick.
Yeah.
And so whatever the subject is, you must include the INTRO. And that covers a lot. That actually lays out, sort of a pattern for your 20 minutes with the group. Now, if you tell an audience you're going to speak for 20 minutes, what do you think goes on in their minds?
Hope there's an internet connection in this room so I can get my phone to work.
Let's hope he doesn't go longer than 20 minutes. Straight away in their head, they program themselves.
Yeah.
And when you go over 20 minutes, they'll forgive you for 1, 2, or 3 minutes, but then
they start in the
watch.
They start fidgeting and moving around. And
yeah,
they're
he said 20 minutes.
The room,
Then they start looking left and right and say, didn't he say 20 minutes? It doesn't matter how interesting it is. Now, big, very large speakers, famous people who come over here for big seminars, they're invited to do an hour and a half and 2 hours.
Those are long.
Well, even they have interaction with the audience.
Yeah.
You have to. This is one of the things at the beginning as well. You have to plan out what am I going to say, how am I going to say it, who I'm saying it to, when am I going to use a visual aid. How am I going to do? You have to ask yourself all those questions, and it takes some self-reflection. In a way, I like to think that when I'm doing a presentation, or indeed a training course, I'm kind of a producer. I'm producing, I hate to use the word a show, but I'm producing a multimedia, hopefully very interesting, with tons of variety.
Rick, it is a show in a sense, isn't it? I mean, it's a piece of entertainment.
It's
with an educational component, I suspect.
Well, you know what? Today people need that. Today people have an attention span of 3 minutes. Communication experts say that we can listen to
3 minutes.
Yep, they say 3 minutes plus minus we can listen to the spoken word concentrated. And therefore,
well, that's about right. If you ever listen to Virgin or 92, our sister stations, they only talk for about 3 minutes before they throw on a song.
And it's very fast, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm talking very fast now. But, of course, in a presentation, you've got to slow the thing down. You have to rehearse it. I mean, if I'm giving a 20-minute talk and I practice at home in front of my wife or the tape recorder or the mirror or the dog, it's going to be 15 minutes. The reality of the presentation is actually 20. But I have to say this. I just thought of it as we were talking. We talked about nervousness. My most nervous event, my most nervous presentation was at my son's school in grade 4.
A grade 4? Now, why? Why were you so nervous?
Well, because I'm representing him. He set it up with his teacher.
Yeah.
It was actually a Canadian teacher. And he set it up, and I was talking about Shackleton.
Okay.
And I had to change the Shackleton presentation to fit the young people. And the questions that came at the end was the biggest thrill. And I think it's because, I think children or young people are very discerning.
And they're very honest, too, aren't they?
And they're very honest. And they listen so carefully. Yeah. I've never had such an audience that listens to every word. I think their attention span is certainly greater at that age. But so I hope I outlaid what you may have to do at the beginning. You've got to also decide, James, on your visual aids.
Now, how important are visual aids? I mean, having the visual cues.
Look, I've seen presenters.
I'm leading you in here a little bit.
Yeah. There's something called death by PowerPoint.
Oh, and how many of us?
Yeah.
raise your hand. If you're out in a car, honk the horn if you've gone through a death by PowerPoint experience in the last 6 months.
Yeah. Well, and I'm guilty, and I hope everybody else who don't raise your hand if you're driving, but you know, but you know what I mean.
Beep the horn, just beep the horn.
There's a guy here in town. I can't think of his name, but he's an expert at redoing your PowerPoints. And I sent him my PowerPoints for a presentation on leadership, I think. And he, tell me how many slides I need to reduce it by, and he came back and said 2/3.
How many slides did you have?
Oh, I must have had 120 or so. And I rang him up. I said, I can't do that. He said, Rick, you're too attached to your slides. And that's not what they came for. The slides are to enhance your presentation.
Yeah.
They're to support your presentation. They are not your presentation.
Mm.
And, of course, we all know that, you know, communication experts, again, are quoted as saying that a picture or a visual can increase the effectiveness of the spoken word by 6 times,
yeah.
6 to 7 times. Well, that's fine. But if you're, you know, what you can do, of course, with all these PowerPoints and other information that you think they must know, is send it to them after the presentation.
Well, you know, and you know, I who mean, does that? Who's got the worst set of PowerPoints, but the best set of PowerPoints is Tom Peters. And if you've ever been to a Tom, his PowerPoints are awful. I mean, he's got 200 in the set, his master collection. He gives them to you, and
oh yeah,
they're his speaking notes, really. And they are the worst-looking slides you've ever seen.
It looks like he did it the night before.
I'm convinced he does. I mean, he just has 200 slides. He's got the baddest fonts, the worst colors. And he just clicks them through and, you know, walks through some of those quotes and tells the story. And that's what keeps him going for an hour and a half.
Well, yeah. I mean, sometimes he's on stage longer. But we talked about Steve Jobs. Have you ever seen Steve Jobs presentation?
Oh, beautiful, beautiful.
4 slides in an hour.
Yeah.
Showing the product picture in 1 or 2 words.
Yeah.
And then he doesn't show you the iPad till he's finished the presentation.
Yeah.
And then he reveals, ta-da, this is what I've been talking about. And he has. There's been a book written about the presentation skills or techniques of Steve Jobs by a Newsweek writer, and it's coming out, I think, next week. And I hadn't thought of Steve Jobs till one of my participants asked me. And then I went to the hotel that night and researched it and downloaded one of his presentations to show him. It's fantastic.
You know, there's a great site if you're taking a look at some of that stuff called Presentation Zen.
Presentation Zen.
Presentation Zen. And what's beautiful about Presentation Zen is once you get onto that site and you search Steve Jobs, and what they do, what he's done, the author of this site, and it was actually, he's got a book out too called by the same subject, but he does a nice comparison of Bill Gates and Steve Jobs. And, you know, backs up a little bit for when Gates was doing more of the Microsoft stuff, but puts them side by side and looks at how they've constructed their messages slightly different, how they're using visuals different, and just how they're, and it's you know, he's not pointing fingers at Gates and saying, look, he's not doing this right. He's just saying different styles, and really building on the job side of it, but really making a nice comparison because many of us who are using PowerPoints can easily relate to what Bill Gates is doing. And it's just a really, it's a big eye-opener because you kind of go, oh, yeah, I see. I get it.
Yeah.
You know, what's the message?
I think probably their advantage is, of course, the message is very much desired. They want to hear about this. Bill Gates would not have, if we didn't know what he did, and Steve Ballmer, who's a more punchy, loud, marching around Tom Peters type, but Bill Gates is not exactly, you would say, has a stage presence, but he has respect, of course. And this is the thing. We'll listen to him because he has wise words. And I think he's just got a very nice layback style. But, yeah, it's interesting to talk about great communicators.
Well, I want to back up for a second. We'll go back to the communicators.
Sure,
but
sure.
I want to go back to the slides.
Yeah.
Why are people so attached to PowerPoint? You know, I know we used to, because when you think about PowerPoint, go back to your Kodachrome slides, go back to your overhead projector with the acetates, and who uses those?
Yeah.
Have you seen an Edward de Bono presentation in the last 5 years?
Yeah, he sits down and does overhead projectors. Yeah.
He's got a thing full of pens and he does overhead projectors with his sunglasses on.
Yeah.
And it's
different.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he is Dr. Edward de Bono.
Yeah.
But I think, yeah, good question. I think we get attached. We want to have an it's not a crutch. We want to have an aid. We want to make sure we don't lose our place. The other thing, reason that people use PowerPoint slides, I think, is to make up for any lack of credibility on the subject. They say that if you have a good display, it can help to maximize your credibility or make up for any difference.
Rick, hold that thought. We're going to take a quick pause. When we come back, we're going to pick up why it is we're using all sorts of different audio visuals when maybe we just need to be better presenters, and we're going to take this a step forward. This is Nightline. I'm joined in studio by Rick Coles. We're talking about how to become a better presenter, and we were just touching on the use of PowerPoint. So you, I want to go back. You had 120 PowerPoint slides in your leadership presentation, sent it to the slide guru who said, get rid of two-thirds, and what did you end up doing?
I stuck with it, and you know, it works. You don't need all that stuff. Let me give an example that you'll truly understand. I also have a radio show in Muscat. It's not live, and the lady I do it with, she asked me questions like you. I don't know what she's going to ask me. I have all these notes in front of me, ready, props. I never look at them. And so the question I have to ask myself, why do I do it?
Yeah.
And that might answer the question about the PowerPoints. I suppose I want to make sure. Mm-hmm. I want to have that safety net.
Yeah.
And it's not really necessary.
And I guess in a sense, that's what the audio visuals, the PowerPoints become. When we talk about PowerPoints, I mean there's a lot of new tools that have come out. I mean we've got things, you know, Apple's got its own type of PowerPoint, a little bit nicer, Keynote it's called. It's a little bit more refined. It does a few different things, but the one I've taken PowerPoint off my computer, and I'm using Prezi, Prezi. For me, when I talk about present, and I don't use a lot of these presentation tools. I usually just use, you know, as you were talking about Kaufman and off air, you were talking about and flip charts. And
I read seven flip charts.
I like that idea. You know, whiteboards and things. I like to be able to write stuff on and draw arrows and rub things out. I think there's a piece of drama when you just take your hand and you just wipe it out and then you put, you know, it gets all black and it's gross. But
yeah.
You know, you need to have a cloth somewhere, but it really gets, you know, you've rolled up your sleeves and you're getting involved in a conversation. Prezi is a big whiteboard.
Yeah.
Have you taken a look?
Yes, I've heard of something similar called Mimio board.
Okay.
Mimio. A friend of mine in Oman is the agent.
Okay.
I'm helping him with the presentation of that, and as such, this is one that we're very interactive. You can invite the audience or the class.
Yeah.
In our case, and invite the class to come up and write something and show an example and add to whatever you've written.
Yeah. So it's you know, there are all sorts of different ways to do these things. But that the big issue is it you that's doing the presentation or is it that tool?
Well, yes, and that's why you have to, I think your style has to adapt to what you think is the best tool for you. As I said, a friend, Ron Kaufman, uses seven flip charts. Somebody else uses nothing. Somebody else uses PowerPoint. I know other people who just talk. So, again, it depends what is your, as we were talking about in your preparation, who am I talking to?
Hmm.
What is really required? And it's always fewer slides. And will it be interactive? Welcome questions during my presentation or only at the end?
What do you recommend?
At the end for me.
Yeah.
I tell you why. Because if you told the audience I'm going to be talking for 20 minutes, then the questions will come in the middle and you'll never finish because it'll be 35 minutes. If it's highly technical, James, I would say, and I'm sure those who do technical presentations will tell me, well, we need questions during so we can clarify, and usually it's open-ended.
Right.
But in a classroom, you know, situation as I've been in, as you are in, then, of course, it's questions during, isn't it? Because you're not making a presentation. You're talking. You're making a presentation, but it's very interactive.
Yeah.
And so in my classes, I say, you know, questions. And in fact, if they don't question, I worry what's going wrong. I want to have questions. But in a formal, if I can say that, a formal presentation, for me, it comes at the end. Now, the great thing about questions and that policy on questions is that it gives me a chance at the end of the presentation to make sure that I got over my objectives. And sometimes questions come that show me and tell me that they weren't listening actually to a certain part. It's a second chance. The other thing about the
question... So it requires you then to be on your game as well and really be listening to what's being said.
That's right. Something we're talking about today, the skill of listening. It's so important that you look at the person who asked the question, listen intently to what they say. Now, if you don't...
How many people do you think actually do that?
To actually listen?
Yeah.
Well, you can't answer unless you really listen to what they're saying and what they're trying to get at. But I was asked a question the other day in a presentation, and I didn't understand it. I didn't have an answer. And there's two things you can do. You can repeat the question and rephrase it,
mm-hmm.
and then say, as I understand it, you'd like me to answer the following question. And then they'll say, yes, that's it, or no, there isn't. And that's given me time to think of an answer. But the other thing, James, if you don't know the answer, they'll respect you for saying, I simply don't know that answer now, but I will get back to you in 24 hours. And then the trick is get back to them in 12 hours.
Okay. I mean, that's a really important point, though, isn't it? If you don't know something, don't try and make it up there because you're only going to embarrass yourself. Admit you don't know. And you'll get respect for that, especially if you, as you suggest, do follow up.
Yeah. And, of course, you thank them for the question twice, at the beginning and at the end. And always say that's a very good question. Now, sometimes people say, well, what happens if it's a hostile question?
Well, that's a great one. What if they're
aggressive?
That one person who thinks that you're full of, you know, wieners and beans, and says, you know, hold on a second, I don't like this guy. I'm gonna show people that Rick has no idea what he's talking about.
Yeah. They try to expose, and therefore, again, you have to maintain your style, not only in asking, are there any questions? Because a lot of presenters, when you get to the 20 minutes or 30 minutes, they go, oh gosh, it's over.
Yeah.
Are there any questions? That doesn't work. You have to maintain, say, now, thank you very much for your time. I am open for questions. Are there any questions? And put your arm up and step forward to the audience and welcome them. I'll tell you a little secret about the questions when I was in sales. I always wanted questions because questions, again, it's a great way to repeat key points.
Yeah.
I would plant one.
Okay.
I would say, look, if there's no questions, would you mind, especially somebody I know well, would you mind asking a question? And I suspect a lot of people do that. Plant the questions. Or I will ask somebody. Yeah. Outright, somebody near the front, I'll say, was there an aspect of what I said that is not clear to you, or is there something you'd like to ask me, or so forth? Yeah. And they'll generally jump up and ask you something.
Well, this goes right back to what we started off with, and one of the number one fears that people have is speaking in public. And then when they're at a presentation and they get asked if they want to participate in it, they've got the fear to overcome.
Well, yeah. I mean, the fear, I think a lot of it can be reduced. A lot of it can be reduced.
What kind of techniques do you prescribe for reducing some of the anxiety of speaking in public or in small groups?
Well, one thing is get to your venue early. Don't be late. I've done that. I've got there with 5 minutes to go, and they introduced me on the stage. There were 10 speakers. I was towards the end, and they said, now from, I was with KLM in those days, now from KLM Royal Dutch Airlines, Rick Coles. And I had parked my car 8 blocks from the venue. It was a hot summer day in Melbourne. I ran to the venue. I had sweat coming down. I was nervous. And I stepped on the stage, and there was a spotlight straight in my eyes. And they told me, by the way, Rick, there's 400 people out there. I said, thank you very much. And I stood in front. And at the end of it, though, James, I said to my colleague, oh, that must have been terrible. And you saw how nervous I was. She said, we didn't notice. So what you fear other people notice isn't always the case.
Okay.
And that's something to remember. Another way to reduce the stress, I think, and the nervousness is to open with the story. Make them laugh. A great icebreaker.
Are there any boundaries there?
I think there are boundaries. It depends on the size of the audience. You have a small audience, you have to adapt a little bit. If it's a very, very large audience and you're on stage, you might want to step down closer to the stage and ask a few questions, especially if it's about the topic. About retaining customers, for instance, and you might go down, you know some of the people in the front row, and put a microphone in front and say, how do you retain customers? And what do you think about retaining customers?
Last year's Leaders in Dubai, I was very fortunate to be able to get invited to come and listen at Leaders. And
all right.
There were several of the speakers last year who very much embraced what you're talking about. They wanted to get into the audience. House lights up. They wanted to be in the audience with that audience, getting close to them. And so not just physically getting close, or not just getting close with their topic, but physically being close to them as well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's another,
and I thought that's a big change.
It is a change. there's another thing I like to do when I've spoken here in Dubai and other places is I get there in plenty of time and I have a cup of coffee with them in the foyer.
Mm.
And I introduce myself to a number of the people who will actually be listening to me. And straight away, then, when I do the presentation, I already know them.
Yeah.
I've already got them sort of on my side.
And they're saying to the person, oh, yeah, I had a coffee with Rick just before he came on.
Yeah, something like that. And also, they'll be very receptive to a question, to the question time. I think the other one, and it lends itself to what you said, is to show some movement. You need to movement when you speak.
So
to,
not just
to
standing
be natural
at the podium, but, you know, or a little bit of arm action, not being stiff and showing the nerves.
Exactly. What I do sometimes, I drink several glasses of water. And
that could be dangerous, though.
Yeah, yes, if it's a long presentation. But I walk around the block, take deep breaths.
Uh-huh.
I learned this a long time ago from my manager before I had to give my first presentation. He saw I was nervous, and he gave me a few techniques about loosening up a little bit and taking some deep breaths. Anything to kind of get the body sort of relaxed as much as you possibly can, at least. And then not to appear to be too stiff and for your movements to be too exaggerated and so forth. So.
This year, I had the pleasure of watching Bashar Al-Attiyat getting ready to do a presentation, and he was sort of in a trance as he was standing there. He was talking and he was psyching himself up as he was sort of pacing back and forth and working through what he was going to talk about. And you know, you didn't want to get in his way because he was getting focused and exactly doing what you're talking about.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, some need to be quiet in a room and think about what they're going to do, psyching themselves. And other people, and I prefer this, is to actually mingle with the people and get to know them a little bit before I start. I think being physically fit doesn't hurt. I mean, again, if you're going to speak in a very important event, get a good night's rest.
Mm. Be rested.
Try to, at least. I like to go jogging a little bit or have a morning swim. It does wonders, I think.
I'm joined in studio by Rick Coles. We're talking about how to give that killer presentation.
Nightline, your interactive opinion platform. Text 4001 or Twitter NightlineDXB.
I'm joined in studio by Rick Coles. We're talking about giving those great presentations. And we're moving on quickly. Let's see, there are all sorts of things as you're looking at the different pieces that all come together. And, you know, it all connects together as well. I mean, right down to before you even start talking, to really having that preparation down.
Yeah, I have a friend who's a composer. Actually, he was a famous Hollywood composer, and he lives in Australia now. And we were talking about this, and he said, you know, when you put together a presentation or a training course, it's a little bit like putting together a piece of music.
Hmm.
There's so many ingredients involved, there's so many parts involved, and there's so many decisions to make. So the whole thing is in harmony, unison, and in tune with the audience's needs. There's a great saying.
So I'm going to just interrupt for a second.
Yeah.
So if you're going to get up and do a speech and you're not giving the audience what they need, that's going to be the speech where they're on their Blackberries, where they're yawning, where they get up and walk out, or someone decides, oh, this is a good time to go use the washroom.
Absolutely right. I have an acronym called CARE, C-A-R-E, which is what I say with my training. I take care of my training. The C is for helping them comprehend something. That means understanding some aspect of the presentation that they can actually apply in the workplace and make an appreciable difference. And then that leads to results excellence, and that's the RE of CARE, hoping that leads to results excellence. Can you change their life? Well, not necessarily.
Mm.
But you can make them. I think you made the point earlier about putting them on the right road as far as whatever it is you're trying to sell or trying to convince or try to present. I mean, there are many reasons for presentations. You're selling an idea, you're introducing a new product, it's a briefing session, it's a report on a project, whatever it might be. You've got to make sure that they have a takeaway. So when they leave the venue...
A takeaway.
I call it a takeaway. And it's something that... It's essential application tool, something that they can use that they didn't have before they came.
Hmm. How many people do you think do this?
I guess
the better speakers do, but I mean, this is something I wonder how many of us actually think, okay, what is the audience going to take from this? What are they going to be taking home and telling to their friends, to their other colleagues?
Well, it's more to do with their organizations, I find. Their organizations, more and more today, the clients I have say, we want value for the training. They want a cost-benefit analysis, which I do now. They want their employees to come back and do something better, faster, more efficiently, saving costs, adding value, whatever it might be. And that's why in the research, I sit with their HR, I sit with their management team or whatever and say, what would you like your people to do differently at the end of this training course?
Hmm.
And so I spend a lot of time on that because, quite honestly, James, if I don't do that, they won't come back again.
Yeah.
And I exist on return business, just like I did in the airline business. I like to retain customers, and I like to attract new ones. Simple as that.
So it's figuring, you know, it's making sure that when people are getting up to do those, ultimately, what do you want people to have? Something that they're leaving those people they're presenting to with, whether it be in sales, whether it be in idea generation, but leaving them with something so that it's not just sitting and listening to you speak. It's getting active in some way, shape, or form.
That's right. I mean, what lends, what is the best saying that explains this to me is the following, if I can remember. It's an Eastern proverb. I hear and forget, I see and remember, but I do and understand.
Hmm.
And that's why if we can get people to do things, and in presentation techniques, they have to do things, and it's interspersed with my theory and discussions. But if they have to do something, they have a better chance of retaining and learning and being able to apply.
Hmm.
It's simple, but also as complicated as that. There's, as you said in the beginning, there's so many elements of a presentation. I've really just hit on a few. But there's so many decisions to make for this wonderful presentation you hope to make, so it is successful. And so people leave the venue, leave the training room, leave the classroom, and they have a desire and a need to know more. When they contact me on the website, and I'm sure you experience this too, when somebody contacts you and says, can I have more information? This is the sign that, okay, I hit home. They want to know more. They're really hooked by presentations or negotiations or sales or whatever it is we talked about.
I'm curious how your take on this situation, because this one is always nagging me in the back of my mind when I talk to people about presentations. And I think, but I have no scientific proof of this and done no research to back it up, but I think we set ourselves up to fail when we do presentations, not because of the content. I think many people do excellent research, and I think people are excellent at writing out speeches. But, of course, the problem is you shouldn't be reading a speech. You should be saying a speech. And the way we write and the way we talk are different. But the real failure from my thinking, and again, I've got to do some research on this, is that when people work on a speech, they do it just like you and I are doing now. We're sitting down. We're at a table. We're scratching out some words on a piece of paper. We're working through it in our head.
Mm-hmm.
But 99% of speeches are standing up, they're verbal, and they're engaging an audience, yet we practice and create the speech doing exactly the opposite thing. And I wonder if people wouldn't give much better speeches or be much quicker at getting to a better delivery if they, this is going to sound silly, but if they literally wrote their speeches and worked on their speeches standing up and verbally, and as you know, post-it notes and posting them on the wall and talking through the speech.
But this is what you do at the university, I think, and I've done the same thing. You know your subject inside out. What you're trying to do is engage, enthuse, and involve the audience. So we use post-it notes, we use whiteboard, we use ad hoc stories, and so on and so forth. But And that's great.
I mean, that's good for you and me because we do a lot of it. Well, what about the
presenter?
What about the sales guy or the manager in an office who isn't, you know, they're more of their communication is one-on-one. They're not doing the big presentation, but they're taking the course.
Exactly. You're very good point. In fact, that's exactly what one of my participants said to me. He said, "Rick, I give one-on-one technical presentations. I sit down with people." And I said, well, are some of the elements that we've discussed here useful to you? And he said, yes, I can use some of them. And I do want to give presentations to a larger group of people. There's always a better way. And as a presenter, I'm always looking, how can I be original? How can I differentiate? Mm. How can I do it better? But two other key points that I thought about when you were talking. We have a self-fulfilling prophecy sometimes. We think we're going to fail.
Okay.
And if we think that, if you don't have a coach, if you don't have a course, you don't have someone to encourage you, whether it's a wife or a friend, a son or daughter, whatever, you don't have that, Yeah, we set ourselves up to fail, and there's no need for that if we do the hard work. We have to visualize ourselves being successful. That's a wonderful study one day we could talk about, visualization.
That's a great idea.
How we can visualize ourselves doing well.
Millicent has sent in a quick note saying, can you repeat what CARE stands for?
Yeah, sure. It's on my website, but I'll repeat it.
Yeah, well, give the what's your website address?
It's on the front page, actually. It's www.coalestraining.com. That's C-O-L-E-S training.com.
Like the bookstore.
Yeah, exactly, like the Coles bookstore. In Australia, where I live, Coles is a massive grocery store.
Okay.
No connection.
www.coalestraining.com. So,
so CARE stands for Comprehension and Application, which can lead to results excellence. And I did that in a coffee shop in Muscat one afternoon. But anyway, the point about it is that's really what I try and do. And I'm sure others as well, we all have, if you're going to train people, you have to have a passion to make that your people who attend will do something better, differently, more efficiently, and of course at the end it brings them more pleasure and enhances their career. Because as I said at the beginning, presentation techniques is a tremendous career enhancer, and more people want to see people who don't just have technical proficiency and technical brilliance. They want people also who have interpersonal skills. The hard and the soft together is an absolute winner. And so many general managers and CEOs today say to me, I know all the other stuff, but I don't know how to communicate to my people, or I'm not a great presenter. Well, we don't have to be all the best presenters in the world. If we just keep it simple, look at the elements of a presentation, put it together, a lot of hard work in the background, some success, some failure. We learn from the failure, let's face it. I mean, we learn from everything we do that could have been done better. And when you feel that success and you can replicate it over and over again, I think you're on your way.
Rick, I want to thank you very much for coming in. We're going to get you back in a month's time when you're coming back through. And I think we're going to go back to Shackleton next time and have another. We're going to talk a little bit more about leadership and some of the applications therein. So,
okay.
Thank you very much.
Look forward to it. Thank you, James.
This is Nightline Dubai Eye 103.8 FM. That's a wrap for another night. We'll be back tomorrow, same place, same time, 8 till 10. Natasha Vallon is our executive producer. My name's James Pikeway. Coming up next, the Filipino Rhythm.